You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The music of tomorrow is being written today. The music of tomorrow is almost ready to play.
Experience the musicals of tomorrow today. Get a glimpse inside the blueprint of an original musical being developed in real time with New York Theatre Barn's podcast, The Musicals of Tomorrow.
The music of tomorrow.
I'm Joe Barros.
And I'm Jen Sandler.
And we're the hosts of The Musicals of Tomorrow. As the artistic director and associate artistic director of New York Theatre Barn, we make space to speak in community with musical theater writers and their creative teams.
Lifting up songs from original culture-shifting musicals in development and introducing them to a global audience has become a major part of New York Theatre Barn's evolving story.
Each original musical's intention, content, and journey are unique and extraordinary to the storytellers who create them. We believe that there is no formula for musical theater except authenticity.
We recently spoke with the writers of Little Miss Perfect, Jeriah Kwame, and Lauren M. Gunderson, and House Rules by Daniel Mertzloft and Kate Leonard.
Our first new musical is Little Miss Perfect, which has music and lyrics by Jeriah Kwame and book by America's most produced playwright, Lauren M. Gunderson.
Coming of age is even harder when you're also coming out. Noelle's world turns upside down when she develops feelings for Malaya, the foreign exchange student being hosted by her conservative family. As class president, she also must confront her privilege and compliance when her high school refuses to take steps in being more inclusive. Noelle struggles to decide whether she will be true to herself and an ally to her peers, or if she will settle with simply being Little Miss Perfect.
And now, here's our conversation about Little Miss Perfect with Jeriah Kwame and Lauren M. Gunderson.
Hey, friends.
Thanks for joining us. So, Lauren, I know you hear this a lot, but it's exciting. You are America's most produced playwright, and your plays include I and You, a fantastic two-hander, Miss Bennet, Christmas at Pemberley, Bower, Silent Sky, Exit Pursued by a Bear, and Toll and Trouble, among a few. You're also the book writer of the musicals The Amazing Adventures of Dr. Wonderful and Her Dog, Justice, the new musical about Justice Sandra Day O'Connor and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Jeanette, about Jeanette Rankin, the first congresswoman, which was a part of our virtual New York series almost a year ago, as we just mentioned. Jeriah, you are a writer whose passion for musical theater composition was sparked when you wrote and self-produced your first project at age 13. You performed your original R&B, neo-soul music throughout your youth and adolescence, opening for artists such as Anthony Hamilton, The Dramatics, Life Jennings, SMV, and Keith Sweat. You've since written over six musicals ranging widely in style and subject matter, from song cycles, stories of strong women, a dark retelling of Pinocchio, to an MLK biopic. Your song, Little Miss Perfect, was a winner of the 2019 Write Out Loud contest and has since become a viral sensation. So yeah. Legend has it that our award-winning hit song, that your award-winning hit song, Little Miss Perfect, did indeed come first and was ultimately the impetus for the musical the fans responded to the song, and it's like the universe told you that there was more than just a song, but possibly an entire show. So tell us more about the success of the song Little Miss Perfect and how that led to the show Little Miss Perfect.
Yeah, so I won, like you said, Write Out Loud in 2019 and got to work with Taylor Lauterman on the song. And I don't think either of us anticipated the reaction. Like, in my mind, it was definitely like a more lighthearted, important story to tell. But I never imagined, like, as soon as the song came out, I started to get hundreds of Instagram messages from kids all over the world saying, like, this song is the reason I came out to my parents, and I never thought that they'd be okay with it, but they are. This song saved my life. I needed to hear it when I was having dark thoughts about myself and my identity, and it was a reminder that I'm not alone. And I don't think I was ready for that in the best way. Like, it really just made me realize the power that we as artists have to use our work to challenge an action and also to change people's mind, not just about subject matter, but about themselves. And the opportunity that I have having all these young people's attention was like very overwhelming for me. And so it became clear to me that I think it was time to use my work to create a coming of age story that highlights underrepresented communities and struggles while also tapping into that musical magic that made people fall in love with Little Miss Perfect. And so I thought about all this and I got ideas and I was like, I don't want to write this book. I want someone with more skills in that area to do this. Who should I pick? And I was like, well, what about asking the most produced playwright in the country who I had worked with last year as an actor? And so I went out on the limb and I reached out to Lauren and she said yes. And I was like, yeah, and it's happening now. And I'm just so over the moon and excited to get going on this.
So before we move forward to talk about your collaboration, we have a video of Little Miss Perfect and the way it has transformed. So here you go.
Today, we're going to be talking about Little Miss Perfect, aka the Taylor Lauterman TikTok 13 Reasons Why song.
Straight hair, straight A, straight forward, straight past. I don't cut corners. I make a point to be on time. Head out the student council.
I don't black out at parties. I jam to Paul McCartney. If you ask me how I'm doing, I'll say, well, I was adopted when I was two. My parents spoiled me rotten. Often I ask myself, what did I do to get as far as I've gotten? A pretty girl walks by my locker. My heart gives a flutter, but I don't dare utter a word. That would be absurd behavior from Little Miss Perfect.
Na 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 no. I can't risk falling off my throne.
La 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 la. Love is something I don't even know. Straight hair, straight gaze, straight forward, straight girl. Little Miss Perfect, that's me.
One night, my friend stayed over. We left.
Takes a sip, I bite my lip. She tells a joke, I nearly choke. She braids my hair, I sit there blacking out for the first time. Next thing I know, I lose control. I finally kiss her, but oh no, I see a face in my window. Then my brain starts to go,
no, 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 no. You can't risk falling off your throne.
So, Lauren, we started talking about your collaboration with the show. Tell us more about how you came onto the show and why this show.
Yeah, I mean, it's all Jiraiya. Jiraiya is so professional and ambitious and talented and kind, and it just made great sense. I met Jiraiya as an actor when he was did a fabulous job in a very sneakily hard play. We did a totally reimagined Peter Pan at Shakespeare Theater Company in Washington, D.C. before the pandemic. And that's how I met Drya. And pretty instantly, I was like, oh, whoever this person is great. And then it was actually at the cast party when we were all very excited and kind of staying out a little too late, you know, just pumped up for the opening, which went beautifully. There was a lot of work. And we all know that, like, opening night, when you, like, really earned this the standing ovation that you got. And I remember Drya just saying, okay, let's talk strategy. I want to write musicals. I want to write songs. I'm a writer. Tell me all this stuff that you know. And it just became very clear that his star was one that was rising and I wanted to do anything I could to help. So when he reached out later, I was like, I know this is crazy, but would you ever consider? And I was like, anything, anything you need. And then of course the song is gorgeous. It's a beautiful kind of a microcosm of a whole play in that song. And so there's so much already there. The kind of proof is in the pudding of that song that this can be and will be, as we are creating, a story that is queer positive and has centers women and girls and has this message of defiant young people trying to, as Drya just said, be the change they want to see. It's going to be loving. It's going to be surprising. And so we're really building it right now to kind of fit all of those things and just make it the best we can make it.
Wow. Tell us more about where the show has been besides Write Out Loud.
So this is like the very beginning. The song was a standalone. And since then I have just watch the growth of the song, watching people make the different renditions of the song. People have set it in animatic contexts for like different fan arts for different shows because it's like a general story that they felt like connected to their favorite story or something. So I was seeing all these people connect the idea to something that's personal to them. And so then the question became, well, if I want to make this a bigger story, how would I connect it to me? And so I decided not only that it would be good to talk about the love story between this girl, these two girls who one of them is not out yet. So for her, this is an entire discovery, but it also became clear that I wanted to make it a coming of age story for her as far as where she stands politically. I thought it was interesting that like now a lot of kids, a lot of these Gen Z kids, they have to know where they stand politically. When I was growing up, that wasn't necessarily something that was on our minds. It's like, you just get to be a kid and you get to have all the friends that you have and you love your friends and that's the end of it. But now kids really do have to have an understanding of the world in a bigger level. And so I wanted to create a subplot that connects Noelle, our main character, to these issues happening around her in relation to her best friends who are African-American and her as the class president having to figure out what is the power she has in this scenario and what privilege does she have to add to it? So yeah, we're really developing this story from scratch and yeah.
And it's true what you just said, you know, it's theorized that the election went the way it did because of the Gen Z vote.
Yeah.
And I believe it.
Oh yeah, they are change makers. They are insane in the best way, and I love that. And I wanted this to be a really a love letter to them and the way that they are coming of age right now.
Yeah, and I think that sense of how a high school really is a microcosm of what the whole country is going through. So, I mean, yeah. If you look at certainly Marjorie Stoneman Douglas and the kids that rose up out of that tragedy, mm-hmm. saying, "We went through this, but we all are going through this as well." And I think the show wants to be both a very personal story of somebody figuring themselves out and the more local story of a community and then how that community is part of the world. And I think it's also one of the first conversations Drya and I had was about how to make it an intergenerational story about that as well. So what are the parents doing during all of this? What are they going through? What are they learning? When do those generations finally talk to each other and realize, oh, you're going through this version that I'm going through and that we can do this or this is never going to work, you know? And all of that has such great theater meat to it because it's just nothing but conflict and great characters.
Totally. And you have a concept album coming out later this year, correct?
Yes. I will have the release date pretty soon. But yeah, we will be releasing 10 or 11 of the songs. The first songs, the heart of the show in my mind musically. It's really exciting because I'm kind of breaking apart different musical motifs and melodies from that original composition. And we've exploded it into different characters and different styles to relate to these different characters. So that will be coming out within the next couple of
Let's talk about your first song. Your songs have such, they're so melodic and they have such range. So the first song is going to be sung by you and it's called You Only Know His Name. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I wrote up a little blurb so I don't ramble too much. There is a security guard at this school named Officer Douglas who is infamously racist and targets black and brown students any chance he gets. And there is an altercation between him and one of Noelle's best friends, who is also the school star basketball player, Elijah, who is African-American. And it gets to a physical level because of the security guard, and he ends up pinning Elijah against a locker, which breaks his arm in the process. And so this incident causes a huge uproar and even a protest amongst the student body, and the local news even decides to cover this story. It's just, it's insane. Nothing has ever happened like this in this small town or that has been acknowledged. So the news people show up at Elijah's house and start questioning his father with cameras and microphones, and it's just all very inappropriate. And so his father, who is frustrated with the media circus, and decides to put them in their place. And that's what this
is. So here is You Only Know His Name.
You only know his name. You only know the story. To you, he's just a piece of news, a headline to peruse. You only know his name. Barter with his trauma, my tears are father's fears, but yours appear as TV drama. Hats off, you're giving quite a show. You only know his name. Why not the man who broke him? Is his fence too high to get past? Or do you not know what you would ask? Or is it that you think my son's to blame? You only know his name.
Elijah,
exempt from being a child. I tried to shelter him from seeing this vile reality. Soon I'll have to send him for miles and pray that he makes it back home. Take your camera and your microphone and walk away. I don't have it in me. I can't do this, not today. Yes, I'm finally angry. Is that what you want me to say? It's better. Soon you'll forget his name, but he'll always remember.
Awesome. That was so wonderful. Tell us about the second song, which I mentioned before, also uses the motif that you originally created in the original song.
Yeah, so this song kind of takes us to the high school. So just for some context, Noelle, our protagonist, is the class president. So she's trying to secure her college acceptance. She doesn't have her future planned out like her best friend, so she's feeling a little insecure, like, what am I gonna do after high school? One of my friends is gonna be the valedictorian and going to Harvard, and my other friend is like about to go to the MBA, it seems like, so what am I gonna do? She's conflicted because she's the class president. She has a lot of responsibility all of a sudden. So the school is in shambles after the incident with Elijah's arm, and the students are even going to the length of not coming to class until justice is had and Officer Douglas is fired. They make that the ultimatum. Amani, Noelle's other best friend, comes to Noelle hoping that she can help with the power that she has, but Noelle expresses that she wants to remain neutral in order to save face with the school. This, of course, really upsets Amani and questions their friendship, and Amani goes off. And that is what this is.
And who is singing the song?
This is the beautiful and talented Savannah Fisher.
Who will be on your concept album.
Yes, she will.
Here's Before We Go.
Wait a second, can we stop pretending that we're all affected just the same? Elijah's arm is not the only harm that Douglas causes. Are you kidding, Noel? What the hell? I can't believe you're taking their side. We made a pact, Noel, don't stab us in the back, Noel. Yes, and acceptance is worth. Achieving when no one believes that I'm worthy. While you skate by on mom's connections, future first, friends come second. Since when did you take direction from your stepdad? So hey, it's time for a little best friend recess. You clearly don't give a fuck, so I guess we might as well take a break. You proved today that if it comes down to it, it's you and you and you and you. Don't care what you gotta do. What difference does a promise make? Way to show us who you are before we go.
Oh, she's so good.
My God. But just to highlight, think about all those the songs that we've heard so far and how different they are melodically, pacing. There's so much diversity in sound and the ways that Jiraiya tells a story in a song, and you can see why I jumped at the chance to work with him.
Thank you.
So I think we want to end with a final question. So, you know, as everyone knows, this show has been very much defined in the last year by the TikTok generation, just like our next writers are as well. And it's really made your show a big difference, and it's made other musicals right now as well too. You know, how has that response reflected you in the show? Has it changed the way you've looked at the show, the way you've written the show?
It's really awesome because these kids online are so vocal about like what they're expecting from it already in a great way. I'm able to read comments of like kids being like, oh, this show really resonates with me because of this reason. And I really hope that this happens. And I'm able to take that and it's kind of collaborative, being able to know what they are interested in and knowing like, oh, I love this part of this song. And it's like, oh, maybe that's a moment of the song that can happen in different places. Just being smart about listening to them has been really awesome. And also it'll be really awesome as the songs are coming out to see their live reaction on TikTok and on my YouTube channel and everywhere that they will be, I'm sure, posting and get live feedback as we're workshopping the show. I think that will make all the difference.
Yeah, and Lauren, you're already having that with Jeanette and to go on this show now as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is the way I think that musicals are born, certainly with the generations younger than myself, which is it's their show before it's Broadway's. You know what I mean? It is, yeah. And it's one song at a time that people connect and it becomes theirs. And that to me is one of the greatest gifts of this social media world that we're in. And frankly, of this, as terrible as this pandemic is, people are turning to all the different ways that we can connect. And a lot of them, it is over TikTok and it's Instagram. And I think that actually is a very unique way to build a show, build a following, build a love for these characters. I think Jiraiya and I both want them to feel like you know these characters before you see the play.
And we always say around here, you know, limitation is creation. And I feel like the last year that's really been what has happened for a lot of these shows, you know, for shows like Little Miss Perfect, for Jeanette, for, you know, Ratatouille, the TikTok musical.
Yeah.
Name of the game.
Name of the, yeah.
And we keep making, you know, you can't stop an artist. So there's, I mean, you couldn't stop Jiraiya anyway, but certainly with the pandemic. Jiraiya's like, look, here's 15 songs. You're welcome.
I would say I have a lot of time to write for the first time, and it is amazing having so much time. But
like I said earlier, Jiraiya Kwame is one of the most thrilling emerging voices on the musical theaters. Thank you both so much, and we can't wait to see more from Little Miss Perfect.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, y'all.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Based on the New York Times bestselling novel by Jodi Picoult, our second musical, House Rules, has music by Daniel Mertzluft and lyrics by Kate Leonard.
Jacob Hunt is a forensic-obsessed teenager living with autism in modern-day Vermont. With the help of his devoted mother and oft-overlooked younger brother, Jacob relies on strict routines to navigate daily life as smoothly as possible. The family is thrown into chaos, however, when Jacob's beloved social skills tutor is found dead, and Jacob is suspect number one.
And now here's our conversation with the writers of House Rules, Daniel Mertzluft and Kate Leonard.
Hello. Hello. I'm so excited to be here with you guys.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both for joining us. You are both most popularly known as the co-writers of Ratatouille, the TikTok musical. I'm also working with you on Breathe, Portraits from a Pandemic, a new musical about the pandemic, and a collaboration between five songwriting teams with a book by Timothy Allen McDonald and Jodi Picoult. We've been workshopping and rehearsing, and we will film our piece later this week. Together, you also created the Broadway Junior show, Dot and the Kangaroo, commissioned by iTheatrics and MTI Australia, and you're both members of the BMI Lehman Engel Musical Theatre Advanced Workshop. Dan, you're also known for your viral sensations, the Thanksgiving musical, featured on The Late Late Show with James Corden, and the Grocery Store musical, featured on ABC's Good Morning America. So Dan and Kate, when did you decide to collaborate together, and what inspired you to want to adapt this best-selling novel into a musical?
Great question. So we met at our first year doing the BMI Musical Theater Writing Workshop, where throughout that whole time you're paired up with different individuals. Like you're assigned something and then you're paired up with someone. And Kate and I were never actually paired up, but I always admired her work. I'm not going to say
that. I admired Dan's work.
I'm not going to say that, but and we were chatting at the bar. One time, because you know everyone always goes to the bar after, and I like to call it the world's weirdest dating game, because literally what you're doing the whole year is like, well, I sort of like them, but like I don't know if I'm gonna gel with them, so like maybe we should be friends and not like, because you're in a relationship, you know, when you're in a songwriting team, you really are. So it's like, oh, like maybe this. And I remember chatting with Cade, and I had been chatting with Jodi about possibly adapting one of her books. I mentioned it. Kate was like, yes, I'm into it. And then like next week had come back with like pages of notes. And I was like, great, love this. That's when I was like, oh my God, she's brilliant. Her lyrics are brilliant. Like just in general, brilliant person. Her lyrics are brilliant. And I'm obsessed with her as a person. So like this should happen. That's my version.
Shut up. I'm obsessed with Dan. Dan can write the heck out of a song. And I basically spent the entire first year of BMI being like, oh, wow, he does this every week. He just always puts out something that sticks in your head for the rest of the day. So we committed to writing together for this project, for the second year of BMI, which is always a long-term adaptation with one partnership, without ever having written anything together. And it was very lucky that we work really well together and that we enjoy the partnership.
Yeah. And basically, how we landed on House Rules was I've known Jodi for a few years via other projects, and I said, you know, like I'd really love to chat with you about adapting one of her books, and she was like, well, these are the three that I want to do myself, and then any of the other ones you can like, God bless you, Jodi Picoult, wherever you are. I came up with a short list, and when Kate and I were chatting, she did the same, and we realized we overlapped on a few, read those, and then landed with House Rule.
So we have been working primarily on the songs. Because that's the way that the second year of the BMI workshop works, is that it's just songwriters and you aren't actually looped in with a librettist within the workshop. And so we would talk about the directions we wanted to take with the story with Jody from time to time and see how she felt about choices that we were making that differed from the book or expanded on areas in the book.
Well, while you have a lot of freedom, you're still doing assignments sort of things. You're basically trying to write certain things. So we didn't want to expand out too much in what we were doing and, you know, bring in a dramaturg and all that stuff yet. We were really focused on that. And then we decided, okay, like now we've had a little time after BMI. You know what, why don't we really start to move forward with this? So we decided to make some demos with my buddy Connor Keelan, who's incredible. And I believe I got his first instrumental drafts on like March 9th of last year. So I remember I had notes for him that I was like gonna send him, and then all the stuff happening and I was like, I don't know what's happening. And then, you know, we sort of just let everything die for a little bit, because I think all of us had to do that with things. But it was so funny when we were chatting about doing this, and like, you know, Kate and I have been writing the things and haven't really thought about it for like 9-10 months at this point. Of like the demos were sitting there, the instrumentals were done, and we just, you know, could you even get in a studio at that time, which was fascinating.
Well, we'd love to hear the first song, which is called Just One Dance, and I'm so excited that you're going to be singing the song with Michelle Beth Herman. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. So in the song, Jacob is in a session with Jess, the psychology grad student who serves as his social skills counselor. And they're discussing the upcoming dance that is happening at Jacob's school. And you know how he might ask a girl to dance, how to simply dance. And then eventually, as the song progresses, Jess gets consumed by her own memory of these experiences. And we have a dream sequence of the first time she ever met her horrible boyfriend, but she doesn't think he's horrible. We do though. And then when she comes back into reality, Jacob sings directly to another character for the first time in the show. And this does happen near the end of Act One. And this is sort of a language that we've established for the show is, Jacob really struggles with connecting with other people. And I know there's a beautiful paragraph in Jody's book that is almost verbatim from one of the interviews she did with a person who's on the spectrum about what it feels like to look someone directly in the eyes. And you can't really do that on stage very clearly. It's one of the pieces of the language that we established that he never sings directly to another person. People can sing to him and he can sing his thoughts to the general world, but he'll never look someone in the eyes and sing directly to them until this moment with Jess. And then she dies 10 minutes later.
So here is Just One Dance with Michelle Beth Herman and Daniel.
Come on, Jacob. A school dance can be so exciting. We just need to make sure you know exactly what to do.
What do I do?
The first step is to smile and stand. Turn to greet her. And you hold out your hand. Then you ask her, Amanda, would you like to dance with me? The next step is to enter the crowd, wear your earplugs so it won't be too loud, and you look for a spot where there's room to move easily. Keep your chin up, you don't need to be afraid. Then for a moment, there's only you. Let all the others fade from your view. This is the perfect circumstance.
What if it's a slow song?
That's the easiest kind of dancing. But Jacob, if it's a slow song, you will have to touch her.
Why?
It's an unwritten rule of dancing, and it will be okay. The first step, place your hands on her waist, hold her lightly. You'll be comfortably spaced. She may reach for your neck, but I promise you'll make it through. The next step, count the beats in your head for a slow dance. She'll expect to be led, so you move to the pulse of the song and she'll follow you, gently gliding as the music drives your feet. And for a moment, there's
stupid. I don't want to do it.
Jacob, it's one night of your life. One 3-minute song of obligation. What do you have to lose?
What do I have to gain?
Jacob, one dance can. Well, it can change everything. It did for me.
I always thought affection came in limited supply. And I'd never find my someone, 'cause I'd never catch his eye. The girls who fail at standing out are used to standing by. But the song changed.
And for a moment, there's only us. Take a deep breath, no need to be nervous.
Now is the time to take a chance.
It's just
and
one
for a moment, there's only this.
It's a beautiful moment and a beautiful song. When I first met Michelle, I told her, I said, you'd be an amazing Elphaba. So I started calling her Michelle-phaba.
She is. I mean, I'm so obsessed with her and her voice. She's like not only the kindest person, but like, whew, what a singer.
So before we get to the next song, I know you don't have a book writer for the show currently.
Right. So when we wrote the show, or the songs for the show, it was in a context in which you don't typically work with a book writer. And we decided that, you know, when we wanted to expand the project, we needed to find a book writer to work with. And that's a search that we, you know, are still working on, because we're very interested in working with someone on the autism spectrum, or if not a book writer on the autism spectrum, then a dramaturg, because, you know, this isn't, although there are aspects of the story that is heavily about justice that have universal applications, there are also a lot of specifics about the autistic experience that we can't fully speak to. And we were very lucky in that we had friends in the musical theater community on the autism spectrum who provided us with a lot of feedback and thoughts and told us when we were doing things right and when we needed to revise our thinking in some areas. But we would love, as we move further with the project, to have more of that input in a formal way.
No, I admire that, and I think that's really great, and that's really special. So I'm really excited to see who you bring onto the show.
Yeah, I'm just so excited to see it progress from, you know, even though we were writing knowing that it was going to move forward, at the end of the day, it was still an exercise. Like, there are songs that we wrote for BMI because we needed this specific thing, and we knew that that's what we wanted, never to go anywhere else. We have an opening number that we love dearly. It's cut. You know, but stuff like that, where as we move forward, it's really exciting to see that and to think more of the whole picture as we're going. It's been really fun to also just like reconnect about that, because Kate and I have been writing for so many animals recently, which is just so fun. Apparently we like writing for animals, or for Bree, the piece that that we're working on with Joe, that I still can't believe we're going to be like in a room this weekend with people. It's so bizarre filming. It's just so different than this. And it's been really, really fun revisiting these characters. And, you know, I know 9 months is not that long, but quarantine 9 months feels forever ago. And it's like, wow, I forgot about these songs. It's been fun to rediscover.
So our second song is Jacob's brother, Theo. So he is the younger brother in this family, where there's a single mom and the two sons, and he feels overlooked left at home because his mother is so frequently prioritizing Jacob's needs. So in the scene before this song, Jacob has a meltdown in public, causing his mother stress and embarrassment. And when Theo tries to talk to her, she makes the mistake of saying, "You're not important right now," in a moment of stress. So he bolts before his family even realizes he's gone. And when we find him again, he's inside the home of a wealthy family who appear to be away on vacation. And from the ease with which he enters the house, it's pretty clear he's done this before. So in the beginning of this scene where the song takes place, we see him looking around at the family photos and trophies and news clippings that are displayed on the walls. And he sort of imagines himself, what this family's life is like, especially as it compares to his own. And then later on, what his life might have been like if he had been a part of it. And part of that is he finds this blazer from a private school and he tries it on and sort of fits into that character.
This is Max Antonio Gonzalez singing.
King, he's the best.
Here is "It's Fine Anyway."
Let me guess, in the first grade, Daddy's little prince made some macaroni art that blew his parents away. So they pay for an art class, take his ass to the museum, now see him living off this paper mache. I could paint a better sky than this rich guy any day. But it's fine, I don't like art anyway. See this girl, only 15, in a teen magazine, a feature on her future as a tennis star. Going far, says her trainer, can't explain her, you just gotta see this prodigy, she's always at her raising the bar. I could beat her on the spot with my drop shot any day, but it's fine, I don't play now anyway. And oh, I had a knack for piano too. Wanna be the best on the Eastern Seaboard, so I saved up for my very own keyboard. But oh, Jacob would scream every time I played, so my Casio was thrown out, along with the progress that I'd made. How about them? They had a few kids, made a couple bids on the toddlers and the talents they could cultivate. Who's great on the court? Pick a sport, and academically, systemically, they're guaranteed to dominate. I could outsmart a tool from a prep school any day, but it's fine, I don't want help anyway. Look at me, jacket pressed, I'm the best dressed future money maker, moving shaker on a rapid climb. And I'm gonna sail into Yale, save your scholarships and dollar tips, a job would only waste my time. Driving in a Benz with my drunk friends every day, and it's fine, Daddy loves me anyway. Don't forget, I got more skills, family instills all the values of a budding multi-hyphenate. Won't quit on my game, earning fame as a baller and a scholar, charming ladies with my clever wit. And you know I'll go pro, cause I'm someone's protege. And it's fine, life is easy anyway. And oh, hear the cheering, it's all for me. Mom and Dad up in the stands, shaking all my teacher's hands. And oh, see their golden boy make good. I am climbing higher and higher and higher and higher. Just like they knew I could. Only 15, barely even seen, as I loiter on the fringes watching time go by. And I never needed to succeed, but perhaps the scraps of love I got were not enough to help me try. I could disappear, run away from here any day, and it's fine, they don't need me anyway.
Shut up. Connor Keelan, who orchestrated and produced both of those tracks, because he's
so good. Music directors are the unsung heroes of the theater. Daniel has a lot of MDing himself, so he knows.
Yes. That is my statement on that. Yes.
You know, Joe and I were talking about this earlier. There aren't a lot of shows about, you know, autism and Asperger's. The only show we could really think of is Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. Mm-hmm. You know, why do you think it's important to spotlight autism and Asperger's in the theater? You know, how can we get more shows like this in the theater? Because it's important.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that you say Curious Incident, because that's, you know, the one. And I remember just seeing that and having had friends, many friends who are on the spectrum, and like experiencing that and understanding their experience in a very different way. So like me as a person not on the spectrum, just being able to understand that experience in a different way was really important. And then same thing with Reading House Rules, because Jody did, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of interviews. And I know a lot of those like direct quotes when Jacob is describing his experience are like almost direct. So I think one, just to raise awareness, but also, you know, I have a lot of people who I've been close to in the past who are on the spectrum. So that's why I was specifically drawn to it.
And I think it's, you know, the arts help us cultivate a greater understanding of the people around us and the variety of experiences. And the more people who have some ability to relate to and understand the experience of being on the autism spectrum, the more likely it is that we can cultivate a community where those people get the best support available in everyday interactions, in addition to the justice system, which is what the second act of our show focuses on.
Is it about? Yes.
And I feel like this also creates opportunities for actors who are on the spectrum, which is really fantastic.
Absolutely. So again,
exactly.
Thank you both for that, those beautiful answers, and we can't wait to hear more from House Rules.
Join us next time for more of The Musicals of Tomorrow.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.